relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Portions of the following program may contain pre-recorded material.
This is America First, and here's your host, Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
Anybody who's looking at this carefully realizes that there's a distinct anti-science flavor to this. So if they get up and criticize science, nobody's going to know what they're talking about. But if they get up and really aim their bullets at Tony Fauci, well, people could recognize there's a person there, so it's easy to criticize. But they're really criticizing science. Because I represent science. That's dangerous. To me, that's more dangerous than the slings and the arrows that get thrown at me. And if you damage science, you are doing something very detrimental to society.
Well, you heard it there. He is the God King of science. How dare you question Dr. Fauci? Because, well, you're questioning all of science if you do that. You know what he really means. You're not allowed to question him, because if you do, you may get cancelled. And that brings me to our very special guest today for America First One-on-One. If you turn on Tucker, if you listen to my buddy Dan Bongino, you will hear this guy. He pops up everywhere. Yesterday, his new book was released by my publishers. I didn't even know that. So proud that Regnery have got Pandemia, How Coronavirus Hysteria Took Over Our Government Rights and Lives by none other than Alex Berenson. Alex, welcome to One on One.
Thanks for having me.
Alex, you strike me as somebody who's, you know, a bit old-fashioned because you're a journalist that actually looks for the truth and the facts. Can you explain to me, as such, why you don't have a Twitter account anymore? What happened?
Sure. Well, Seb, I want to say something right off the top. Okay, there's probably a lot of things that you and I disagree about.
I think that is a fair bet.
Right? You know, I think we probably disagree pretty strongly, for example, about January 6th. Okay. But the reason that I basically am a conservative media person now in terms of who will have me on is because the left is so intolerant of discussion about the coronavirus, about, you know, the value of non-pharmaceutical interventions, by which I mean lockdowns and masks and school closures and other stuff that we did last year that basically proved useless, as a lot of data shows. And now it's gotten even worse with vaccines. And, this is why I am no longer on Twitter. I was very, very critical of a lot of things last year. But when I started to ask questions about the vaccines that people didn't like, that's ultimately what got me banned from Twitter. And the irony is a lot of the stuff that I said, starting both last spring, but especially over the summer, about how the vaccines seem to be losing any power to stop infection or transmission. I mean, those are essentially conventional wisdom right now, which is one reason why there's this desperate push for boosters. But, you know, I said it 3 months too early. And I got banned for it. It's crazy to me.
So what was your actual sin? What was, do you know, did the overlords of Palo Alto tell you what the final straw was?
Yeah, so I know what my, Twitter has this five strike policy. I know what my fifth strike was. And the tweet began, the vaccines don't stop infection or transmission.
which we know.
I mean, it is. And then I said, don't think of them as vaccines. Think of them as therapeutics, meaning sort of like more traditional drugs with a bad side effect profile. And I will completely stand by that too. I mean, a vaccine should be permanent or semi-permanent, and it should produce something close to immunity. And yes, that's really, if not complete immunity, that's really what the definition of vaccine is in the FDA's own documents. and what the CDC's definition used to be.
Until they changed it recently, of course.
That's correct.
The plasticity of words was hyped up, and everything is now fungible. We're talking to Alex Branson. For those who aren't familiar with him, we've got 3 million listeners on the radio, and then plus all the others on video. Let's talk about, you know, where you hailed from, who you used to write for. Tell us the potted version, and now you are a favorite of conservative media. But Alex, before that happened, before the coronavirus, what was your beat? Where did you work, and where did you come from?
That's so great, great question. And because one reason I think I engender so much dislike from the left is that I'm a class traitor. I went to Yale. I worked for the New York Times for 10 years. I don't, you know, and I was a reporter elsewhere for about 6 years before that. And my reporting was basically, I mean, I went to Iraq for the paper a couple of times, but essentially I was a financial and corporate reporter who spent several years towards, you know, the last sort of 5 to 6 years at the Times covering the drug industry, the prescription drug industry. So I know the prescription drug industry and, the, you know, and sort of healthcare in general quite well. And, you know, and so that's why I think one reason they hate me so much is I'm supposed to be on their team. And instead, I'm raising all these uncomfortable questions.
So tell us the evolution of your new identity that made you a pariah for the legacy mainstream media. So did you just start writing about COVID? Did you go off by yourself, or what? Were you given a new beat? So walk us through, you know, the last 2 years for Alex Berenson.
Sure. So I left the Times in 2010, and people on Twitter that sometimes say I was fired from the Times, which is completely categorically false. I left on good terms. I left because I was writing novels, which were selling very well. I wrote 12 novels, all of which were bestsellers. And the first one, which came out in 2006, was the paperback number one bestseller in 2008. And it turns out that, you know, that's a pretty good way to make a living. So ultimately, in 2010, I decided to leave the Times, wrote novels for a number of years. And then my wife is a forensic psychiatrist. So she deals with the criminally mentally ill. And she, you know, is sort of mid-decade started talking to me about all the terrible cases of cannabis-related violence she was seeing in patients. And I was actually quite dismissive of this at first. I didn't really believe her. And she said, look, there's a lot of science around this. Psychiatrists all know this. And ultimately, she convinced me to start researching it. And that became a book called Tell Your Children, which came out in 2019.
And it's about the dangers of cannabis, correct, Alex?
That is absolutely correct. It is sort of about the mental health dangers of cannabis. And by the way, I explicitly say in the book, you can know that cannabis is mentally, you know, can have psychiatric consequences and still be in favor of legalizing it. You know, alcohol causes lots of problems for lots of people, and it's totally legal. Okay, but let's be honest about what the problems are. Well, that book, Malcolm Gladwell actually wrote a very nice review of it in The New Yorker. The rest of sort of the, or not, I wouldn't say review, but he wrote a piece that was based on the book's premise in The New Yorker. And then the rest of the media savaged the book, basically, including the Times, really. They either ignored it or savaged it. And that was my, you know, sort of hard wake-up call that if you present stuff that is ideologically uncomfortable, no matter how well-researched it is, and even if it's not explicitly political, because I Tell Your Children is not explicitly political, you can get in trouble with the sort of, with the woke media gods, whether they are social media or legacy media.
And let's just stop here for a second, because I wanted to talk about this later, but you've mentioned it already. So this is your book, Tell Your Children the Truth About Marijuana, Mental Illness and Violence. Was the issue, Alex, that you were bucking an established narrative and that was verboten?
Yes, and I think honestly part of the issue was that these so many people had been repeating to themselves for so long that cannabis just was in no way dangerous, that they were almost shocked at how strong the science around its potential, you know, mental health risks really is. And so it's really bad when you tell somebody something and they just have no idea that it could even be true. And then you have science to sort of and data to back it up. But so fast forward 2 years, or really a year and a half, fast forward to the coronavirus, which, you know, the coronavirus starts in, you know, becomes a public issue in January 2020. I was working actually on another novel and on a larger book about U.S. drug policy, which is something I'd like to return to at some point. But so I was, you know, but immediately the coronavirus obviously became a big story. And I have to be honest, at first, and I talk about this in Pandemia, I was pretty nervous about the coronavirus. I think we all were.
Well, because we didn't know. It was novel.
We didn't know. That's right. It was novel, and the data coming out of China seemed to be quite scary, and the videos of people dying, you know, seemingly dropping dead in the streets, and, you know, it looked pretty bad. And so actually, you know, it was sort of mid-March when the Imperial College of London put out this big paper saying, you know, 2 million Americans are going to die from this if we don't do anything about it, and all these Britons are going to die. We have to basically shut down the world. And I started to really dig into the data that they were offering, and it became clear that there was this giant gap in mortality by age.
All right, we're going to talk about all of these findings. Yes. We have in your book just a list of shocking statistics that people aren't aware of. Let's start with the mortality, but first I want everybody to know that you are a reliable collator of information that others deem dangerous because it counters a narrative. So access this information at alexberenson.com or at his Substack, which is alexberenson.substack.com. More with Alex Berenson one-on-one after these messages. I'm Sebastian Gorka, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor, pain relief that works, pain relief that is 100% drug-free, pain relief that is liberating tens of thousands of Americans from their daily pain, me included. But not just me, people like Leah from Ohio. This is Leah's story. One Sunday morning, I sat on my couch in so much pain, I was in tears. That's the day I ordered Relief Factor. Following directions, in 8 days, I found relief only to get better and better. I'm a believer 100%. That could be your story. That should be your story. Find out today by ordering the 3-week quick starter pack at relieffactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening like I do, and I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Leah, and thousands of your fellow Americans. What have you got to lose? Well, except the pain. You know it makes sense. You've waited long enough. Do it today. Call 800-500-8384. Just $19.95 for your 3-week quick starter pack. That translates to less than a dollar a day. Do it today. 800-500-8384. ReliefFactor.com.
The most awesome pipes in talk radio. Sebastian Gorka.
Welcome back to One on One with none other than Alex Berenson. So, Alex, talk to us about first the mortality figures, because we have this one figure that Americans, according to your book, thought that they thought they would die at a rate 25 times. Or, 100 times greater than the actual risk to them. So talk to us about the first thing you found out about the disparity between expectations and actual data.
Sure. And by the way, the Substack is the best place to go. I'm very active on that since Twitter kicked me off, and you don't have to pay for it. You can sign up for free. Most people are signed up for free. It's called Unreported Truths, and, you know, just check it out at Substack. But so, yes. When Americans are surveyed, and this survey is not running anymore, but it ran for for actually over a year, about what they thought their risks of dying if they got the coronavirus were, I think the number came in at 20 to 25%. So people thought they had about a 20% risk or 25% risk.
Meaning one in four people would die.
That's correct, and that number is off by a factor of about 100. You can argue about it a little bit, but it's about 100. And by the way, if you do this about hospitalizations, people think that there's like a 50% chance or more that they're going to have to be hospitalized with the coronavirus. And once again, aside from the, you know, elderly, the number is, you know, it's in the 1% or less range. So people just have a completely skewed idea of the coronavirus risks to them.
And talk to us. I think the one that's most of an affront to anyone who just takes a moment, just 15 minutes to do a little bit of primary source research. Can you talk to us about children and mortality rates? Because, yeah. I tell this story on my radio every single day. Every morning I walk my dogs and I walk past this beautiful playground and the kids are in masks and the parents are in masks. And it blows my mind because I know these aren't, you know, kids from a children's hospital with leukemia. These are dozens and dozens of children from the local community who are masked. So, Alex, talk to us about the truth about how dangerous COVID is based upon the data to those under the age of 18.
So the truth about the risk of COVID to children and teenagers is that it is in healthy children. I'm talking, and when I say healthy, I don't mean like your kid's about to run a marathon. I mean somebody who isn't severely ill with, you know, a bad genetic defect or late stage cancer. So I'm defining healthy very broadly. The risk to those kids is so low that it is essentially impossible to track. In the UK, which has about, you know, 60 million people, 65 million people, 12 million people under the age of 18, they found 60 deaths that in the last 18 months that were related to coronavirus. When they really looked, more than half those deaths were absolutely unrelated. They were just, you know, somebody who'd gotten COVID, a positive test, and then maybe they'd been in a car accident or something like that. Absolutely unrelated. So you're down to 25. Of those 25, 19 had either, again, late stage cancer or really severe genetic problems or basically those two things. So if you actually counted the number of healthy people under 18 in the United Kingdom who've died of the coronavirus in the last 2 years, you get six out of 12 million. And the statistics are they're directionally almost exactly the same in the US. The US, we're claiming 800 kids under 18 have died. Now that's out of about 80 million kids. So the top line number, and this gets, you know, all the people who want your kids to stay home forever and never to get to go to school, they'll say 800 kids died. Well, first of all, that's out of 80 million. But again, in reality, once you look and you count the ones where you once again cut away the kids who are really ill, you get to a tiny number. And I'll just tell you about two cases, okay? One was a four-year-old in Galveston County, Texas. This was back in September. She was reported to have died of COVID. And just a couple of weeks ago, the Galveston County medical examiner said she didn't die of COVID. Well, guess what? The first story made national news. And the second one, and by the way, I don't know what she really died of, but the case never made any sense. And here's another one. In Alberta, Canada, a 14-year-old was reported to have died of COVID, and his sisters got so angry, they actually went to Facebook and posted, and the government of Alberta, Canada had to acknowledge this. They said, "Our brother died of terminal brain cancer. He had stage 4 brain cancer. He caught COVID at the end of his life when he was already hospitalized."
So hang on a second. So the relatives of somebody who died was so incensed.
That's correct.
They had to correct the record because nobody else would.
That's correct. And this has happened repeatedly. Children are just not at any risk from this. I'll tell you, Seb, the thing that I am proudest of in pandemia and in general in the last 18 months is that I took a strong stand against closing schools very early.
This is what I want to go to. So let's talk about not just the children, but what COVID did to our educational institutions. So tell us why you're so proud about unveiling some of the insanity. Talk to us about what we did to ourselves and our children.
Our children and our college and university students and, even sort of graduate students, they've all lived these insane lives the last year and a half. And for no reason, they're at no risk. And it also appears, certainly younger kids, they clear the coronavirus so quickly, they don't spread it to adults for the most part. They tend to get it from adults. There have been studies done in Sweden and elsewhere showing that teachers are actually at lower risk than other adults in general for getting the coronavirus when they're in school because they're in a relatively safe place for a lot of the day. So we did this. We closed our schools. And when you look back, when I looked back in pandemic in writing this, it was crystal clear that the teachers unions thought that they could punish Donald Trump with this, right? So when the schools are closed, parents can't work normally, parents have miserable lives, children have miserable lives, and if you can blame that on Donald Trump, and by the way, your members don't have to drive to work to school to go to school, they're getting paid, they're not getting fired. It was a great deal for the teachers unions. And I will say, parents are no longer in on this joke. They do not like this. And that's why I think Virginia has a Republican governor now. The teachers unions are going to be punished, I think, for a long time for this. But they certainly liked it last year.
I've said this on the show. Glenn Youngkin had a campaign built on getting Virginia back to work. It was an economic message because he's a businessman. But then he saw what was happening at the school boards, and he pivoted in the last 3 weeks. He came on my show, and he embraced the school moms who were standing up, and that's really why he won. The book is Pandemia by Alex Berenson, How Coronavirus Hysteria Took Over Our Government, Our Rights, and Our Lives. And just on that last point about the colleges, my son is in college in California. And, you know, there's what's evil and what's wrong. And there's also what's bloody insane. When he's at a college and they say, you're not allowed to see your girlfriend or your boyfriend, you think, yeah, a 20-year-old male isn't going to see his girlfriend because the dean of equity and public health says no. I mean, you're just insane. You know, some of this is evil, some of it is just stupid, and there's a lot of it which is just Monty Python-esque. Okay, yes.
And a lot of it, by the way, a lot of it is liability-driven.
Yes, of course. We'll be back with Alex Berenson one-on-one here on America First in a moment. All of you out there know that MyPillow doesn't have giant box stores or any shopping channels. They've been instead targeted by cancel culture, but now they want to pass on big savings directly to you. Get the lowest price in the history of MyPillow for their classic standard MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with my promo code. They also have queen-size pillows, regularly $79.98, now only $24.98 with promo code GORKA, or king-size pillows, usually $89.98, now only $29.98 with my promo code. MyPillow is not just pillows. They have over 150 products, everything from sleepwear to actual beds. Promo code GORKA also works at mystore.com and frankspeech.com. Call today, 800-829-8468. That's 800-829-8468. MyPillow.com, promo code Gorka.
From the ReliefFactor.com studios, this is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
And we're back one-on-one with our special guest, Alex Berenson. Let's talk about masks. So there's a wonderful video out there from, nobody famous, who just, he's somewhere cold up north, it's freezing, he's got a woolly hat on, he's got a proper N95 on, he's got a painter's mask on top, and then on top of that he's got a fabric mask, one of these blue fabric masks, and he takes a big drag from a vape, and then he just exhales the smoke from his lungs. And it's hilarious because it's so cold, you can see everything. You can see the moisture from his breath, you can see the smoke from the vape, and it is leaking out everywhere, down, sideways, through the mask, up around his nose. What's the science on masks, Alex, and especially when it comes to children wearing them 8 hours a day in school? What did you find?
The science on masks is unequivocal, and they're useless. they're useless. This isn't really even an argument people are having. Now, N95s, which technically are called respirators, which are uncomfortable and which are more expensive and which, you know, are not really in widespread use in the United States. I mean, people do use them, but if you wear one of those properly, really strapped tight to your face, and you get it what's called fitted, those may offer some protection. They're far from perfect.
And you'll end up with this pressure mark around your face, right?
That's right. And who wants to wear that 8 hours a day? Almost nobody. And those haven't even been recommended for the civilian population for the most part. Those might work some. Everything else is useless. Okay. And this really wasn't even a debate until, before March of 2020. Okay. And by the way, here's where masks actually might be somewhat useful. If you're symptomatic, if you're actually sick, wearing a mask, A, it can catch, some of the globs of phlegm or whatever that you're spitting up. And B, it's a signal. It says, I'm sick. Stay away from me, which signal becomes totally worthless when everybody's wearing masks. So here's why masks don't work. The very simple explanation is you may have seen these memes that were going around last year of a mosquito and a chain link fence. Well, that's basically correct. The virus, the viral particle, is just too small for the weave of the mask to catch.
Right.
And that's true upon breathing in, and it's basically true upon breathing out. And then on top of that, people don't wear them right. They take them off.
Well, they touch them all the time. People don't understand. As soon as you touch a mask, that's it. It's done. You have to get another one, and nobody thinks about that.
They are useless. And by one last thing on this. There are these graphs that were going around last year where they would show a chart of coronavirus cases, and they put it up against when a mask mandate had been lifted or tightened or put into place initially. And you can just see there's absolutely no correlation. The virus does what it does, and the masks do nothing to change that.
And then boosters. Let's talk about boosters. Where do you stand on what seems to be boosters forever, seems to be the messaging? There'll be gamma, delta, zeta, theta variants, and then what? We'll have boosters in perpetuity?
Well, I mean, this is a horrible idea, and it's dangerous, frankly. Okay, here's what we know about the vaccines. The vaccines will, for a period of 4 to 6 months after the second dose, they're pretty effective at stopping infection and transmission and serious cases, okay? And you can see it in the data from Israel, you can see it in the data from the UK. Every country that vaccinates really aggressively a large portion of its population enters what I call the happy vaccine valley, okay? And the vaccines appear to work. The problem is, for whatever reason, and I think scientists are still doing a lot of work and need to do a lot of work to figure out why, that protection fades within about 6 months. It goes, and it doesn't fade slowly, okay? It fades almost to zero for infection and transmission. And the only argument left is whether or not the vaccines actually then reduce the risk of serious death or serious disease and death for a longer period. And I would say the jury is still out. There's some evidence they do, but that immunity also tends to wane. Okay, so if you're a public health expert and you have been telling people that this is going to end the epidemic, and it's not, you don't have much choice but to tell them to get a booster and to get their antibodies temporarily up again and to hope you can buy another 4 or 5 months. The problem is, this is not a joke, okay? This is not Pepto-Bismol. These are very powerful drugs, right? Very powerful therapeutics, and that booster comes with risk. And future boosters will also come with risk, and they are being completely dishonest about that.
All right, we're very dog-friendly here. What is the name of your dog?
This dog is called Calliope. She is a long-haired Weimaraner, and she needs to get lost, but she's
Weimaraner is high energy. We say hi to Calliope. Where the book is Pandemia, How Coronavirus Hysteria Took Over Our Government, Rights, and Lives.
I know Sebastian well. Listen to him. He's with us.
Welcome back to One on One with Alex Berenson. Okay, so Alex, the big question of it all, you have written the book. I think you've become, at least for 74 million Americans who deem themselves to be conservatives or of the right, you've become one of the most reliable purveyors of facts when it comes to the coronavirus. You've written a book. I want everybody to go and buy it. It came out yesterday. But here's the big question. Why? Why the hysteria? If you don't know my show, I love conspiracy theories as entertainment, but if you dare call my show and spin me on some latest Robert Kennedy Jr. and the world is flat, the flames come out and I just, you know, I have no mercy because it undermines rational thought. But it's hard to identify why. Why would you have somebody like Fauci say at the weekend, we must fear the worst? Why is there this doubling down from people who aren't amateurs, but who've been in the business for 30, 40 years? Have you identified, I'm not looking for a conspiracy, but at least, maybe not a univalent, but at least some answer as to why rationality seems to have been jettisoned, Alex?
I think that's a great question. I'm more of an incompetence theorist than a conspiracy theorist. I tend to view incompetence and sort of bureaucratic incentive as a main driver of things. Look, it's clear in the United States that the left, and the Biden administration in particular, has a huge problem. Okay, and the problem isn't exactly what people, they think their problem is, we promised we were going to make the coronavirus go away and we couldn't, and we're being punished for that. I think their problem is this. 30% of the country never really cared that much about the coronavirus. If you have real problems, if you have a car that's about to lose its transmission and you're making $7.25 an hour or whatever, like the coronavirus was never top of mind for you. Okay. And then 30% of the country, the people who lived in Brooklyn and could remote work, and are just scared by nature, they were terrified. Okay. And those people tend to run Democratic. I think it's fair to say. Or very heavily. So 40% of the country in the middle was rightfully concerned. They saw the videos. They were okay with having the schools closed for a while. They bought into lockdowns for a while. Well, a large number of those people, now it's almost 2 years in, they're past this. They've looked around and they've seen that they don't know anybody who died from the coronavirus, or they know one person and that person was 83. And they've also maybe seen that some people have had bad reactions to the vaccine that they know. So they are done. And a lot of those people actually got vaccinated once, believe it or not. They got their two doses, but they don't want a booster. So the Biden administration is caught between the fact that much of the country, I think, now is completely done with this, and the fact that their base is not. And the base wants coronavirus to go away. And unfortunately for the Biden administration, there is no way to make the coronavirus go away. And so they are increasingly out of touch. And these vaccine mandates are likely to get struck down. So what do they do? Now they have this variant, and it looks like they may even have miscalculated that. It looks like this variant may not be very dangerous, although it may be quite transmissible. So this is going to be another embarrassment for them. I mean, I think/hope that we are perhaps seeing the last stages of this.
So let me unpack that. So what you're saying is that they've, like the boy who cried wolf, they've painted themselves into a narrative corner, that because they painted it as super scary, it has to remain super scary. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, and I say this in the book, I say this in Pandemia towards the end, the solution was going to be the vaccines. With this terrible thing happened, and we, the scientists, we solved this. And by the way, that means you should listen to us about climate change and everything else. And we're finding new genders each week. That's great. It's all part of the scientific process. So that was the narrative. This terrible thing happened and the vaccine saved us. And by the way, you can actually go back to Contagion, the 2009 movie, and this is the narrative.
Yeah.
And it's not like that movie came out of nowhere. So some of the same people who are at the very top of consulting, the government, our response to this, we're talking to Soderberg about this. But unfortunately, reality did not cooperate with them in two ways. The virus is less dangerous than they said, and the vaccines don't work very well. So instead of just acknowledging, basically that the last 18 months have been a complete mess that were totally unnecessary, guess what? They don't want to do that. So now they're really in a corner.
Yeah, they have to double down. One thing we haven't mentioned, and you do spend time in the book Pandemia on this, and along with what's happened to our children, I think it's the most
truly evil aspect of this all, that what was it, 2 years ago, even the vaunted CDC said, as a result of shutdowns, a quarter of adolescent Americans have contemplated suicide. Do we have any idea what the long term, because I think of children at 3, 4, 5 not being able to see each other because of the masks, the consequences of the shutdown, not just for the aged, but for all. I mean, the mental health consequences could be, couldn't they be more dangerous over generations than the actual death rate of the disease?
I mean, they could be. I mean, that's certainly, it's speculative. This is the kind of speculation that, you know, you just don't know the answer. But it is clear that, you know, we've put our mental health system under tremendous stress. And, you know, I haven't reported on this for a while, but there were, and so I can't tell you for certain that it continues to be true. But there was definitely a period of time this spring when if you needed a psychiatric bed, were seriously, I'm talking about for kids who, you know, who were cutting themselves and threatening to kill themselves, those beds were not available at any price. There simply weren't enough of them. And so, so you know, that's a bad sign. Now, and drug overdose deaths, which are on track to set another horrendous record this year, that's another, you know, terrible sign. So it's clear that there has been severe collateral damage from these lockdowns.
All right. The book is Pandemia. It was published yesterday by my publishers, A Fortuitous Happenstance, A Regnery Pandemia, How Coronavirus Hysteria Took Over Our Government, Rights and Lives. This man's writing can also be found by his Substack address, which is alexberenson.substack.com. I'm Sebastian Gorka. You're listening to America First One-on-One across the nation. Don't forget, it's free. Subscribe to the podcast where you can get all of our long-form interviews. Just look for my name wherever you get your podcasts. Look for Sebastian Gorka. And don't forget that we stream live all 3 hours of the radio show on the First Amendment alternative to YouTube. They're not censorious fascists at Rumble. Subscribe today. Tell your friends. Rumble.com/Seb Gorka. That's Rumble.com/SEBGORKA. You can now watch America First on TV, and I urge you to check us out. Go to salemnews.com or download the app today. You can also watch us on Roku and Fire Stick. That's Salem News Channel, the antidote to the lying legacy media. Welcome back to One-on-One with the author of the brand new book, Pandemia, Alex Berenson. Okay, last question to you, Alex Berenson. First things first, God bless you for, you know, deciding to get in your boat and tack in a direction despite, you know, the incoming criticism from former colleagues and what have you in the establishment. When it comes to COVID, I have a very simple message. Do your own diligence. Do a little bit of homework yourself. And when it comes to your health, guess what? You decide in consultation with your doctor. End of story. I don't care whether it's a coronavirus, the bubonic plague, or a hangnail. That is how you should deal with your health. What is your advice to Americans who are still kind of wandering through the miasma of misinformation, disinformation, and aren't sure what they should know about corona or anything else?
I think that's great advice. And I would just add, know how, you know, that the risks are not the same or close to the same for people, that your individual risk really changes by age. And when you're considering taking the vaccine or the booster, if you've already taken the vaccine, understand that the process to get these approved was not sort of the normal regulatory process, that when people say these were rushed, they really truly were rushed. And again, there may well be a lot of people for whom the vaccines make sense, but you should go in with your eyes open and know that this is a powerful pharmaceutical product. I would just say all that. And I do think that for children, because they're at such low risk from the coronavirus, it is. I don't understand why a parent would allow their child to be vaccinated. And our children are vaccinated against everything else. they are not going to get this particular, you know, these mRNA coronavirus vaccines. I'm willing to say that publicly because I feel
because it's too experimental, correct?
That's correct, and because it would be better, you know, for them. And I think actually one or two of them may have already gotten the coronavirus. It'd be better for them to just get the coronavirus and be done with it. Natural immunity appears superior than vaccine-generated immunity in this case.
Well, we'll stay on the line, Alex. I want to sign off, but first, everybody make a note. Support this man. Listen, read what he writes. alexberenson.substack.com for his writings. And the brand new book is Pandemia, How Coronavirus Hysteria Took Over Our Government, Our Rights, and Our Lives.
Not our Weimaraners.
But not our Weimaraners, especially the long-haired ones. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This has been One-on-One. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, keep your head on a swivel, watch your six, hold the line, never give up, never give in, and stay frosty.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.